this isn't the only experiment. Now let's go to another experiment. This has to do with nervous conduction. These experiments were done by Ben Libet, who is a neurophysiologist at the University of California in San Francisco Mount Zion Hospital at that time, and working with a brain surgeon, Bertram Feinstein, who died during the run of these experiments, but carried out enough experiments when Feinstein was alive to do them. Feinstein was a surgeon and was performing surgery on these patients for one reason or another. And Libet was allowed to monitor these patients by actually putting electrodes on their cortexes, on the cortex exposed, because the brain cap had been removed, that part of the skull had been removed, and the cortex was exposed. And that it needed to be exposed because the surgery that had to be done by Feinstein was to excise whatever needed to be excising, whether it was pain modulation or whether it was a tumor, whatever had to be done. And during these times, people could do these kinds of experiments. And the astonishing fact that Libet found can be said quite simply. What he discovered is that we're mostly unconscious. In fact, we're like 99% unconscious. And we make decisions and respond to sensations from the outside world totally unconsciously. And that we only become conscious of the actual stimuli much, much later. By becoming conscious, I mean that we have enough event cognition going on in the brain, enough coalition, enough gathering together of events in the brain to give us a sense that something's happened. If just one event happens in the brain, you're not conscious of it. But if you get enough of them going poppity, 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 eventually that leads to a picture of something happening to you. So what Libet is saying is that we don't really know what happened to us until enough time has passed for us to become adequate in our knowledge. We need something called neuronal adequacy, adequacy for the neurons to perform this little thing. Libet showed in a set of very careful experiments that there was this delay, and the delay could be short, maybe as much as a quarter of a second, maybe a little shorter than that, to as long as a half a second. And that we, therefore, were constructing the out there reality logically a half second before, but we were experiencing it at the time in which it seemed to be happening. So it was like a paradoxical puzzle. Things are happening, and we feel like they're happening, and we know when they're happening within a very small time interval of when they happen, yet we couldn't have known of those things until the green light had flashed. Yet we sense that it happened in between. We couldn't have known something was going on until we had enough neuronal adequacy to figure it out. All these types of experiments are telling us something. They're telling us that we are the creators of reality at a much deeper level than we originally believed we ever were, and that we actually are capable of creating stories of events around us and feeling and possibly even proving to ourselves in some very interesting way that these stories are occurring when they're occurring when we haven't yet had time to integrate them. There are stories of dream states. There's a famous story about Alfred Moret, who is a dream researcher in the time period between 1817 and 1892. Moret was a pioneer in the early to mid-19th century in the study of dreams, and he was the first one to try to analyze dreams by self-observation. And one of these dreams that he had is so striking that it's worth repeating to you because it says something about how we construct time in our minds. We actually create it in our minds. So in this story, Moret is dreaming that he's in the time of the French Revolution. He's being tried. He's taken on a cart. He's wheeled through the streets. And suddenly he's at a guillotine. And the guillotine falls and chops off his head. And he dreams of the feeling of the something hitting the back of his neck. And it wakes him up. And he finds out that the top of his bed has fallen and hit him in the head. Now, could just that event of something falling on the back of his neck trigger this whole long story that he told as if it took pages to write down? Or is there something about the way time gets created that is truly extraordinary? And with that, we're going to look at the physics of extraordinary time travel.